Hey guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and on the phone I've got John Barbin. And today, what we're going to do is we're going to let you listen in on the interview that we did with Jason Haynes, who is the, well, was the actual second overall winner of the last Adonis Lifestyle, Adonis Transformation Contest. And he also won the burn category. So, John, what are some of the really key things that I think people are going to want to pay attention to and pick up off of this?
Part of it was Jason was a skeptic, just like a lot of people are. With any workout program, anything you claim that you hear, lots of people are skeptical. I actually went back and forth with Jason in the forum for a while on this whole concept. The idea of being skeptical before you even try something. I can understand. I guess that's the definition of skepticism, but I just don't understand why people can have that. I guess it just goes to show you how the industry has captured people's minds and made it so hard to believe that there's other ways to do things. So that's one thing that you'll notice in the interview. Other interesting, and kind of within that, was what's the goal of any other kind of workout program that's not explicitly stated? So going through bulking phases and then weight loss phases, what bulking to what size and cutting down to what size and having sort of incoherent, nebulous goals is another thing that sort of came out of it. I guess those are two of the main points. And then one other thing, I guess what we talked about a bit in the interview was the idea of achieving weight loss without killing yourself with doing a lot of cardio or high-intensity training and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially kind of keys into some of the stuff we've been talking about over the last week or so, and even some of the things that we've seen as far as questions with people. You know, the funny thing about it, really quickly before we go into this interview, one of the things I want you to take away is that Jason, just like everyone else, was having a problem coming to grips with the simplicity of everything, and that it can't be this simple. And you know, you really want to pay attention to this. Because Jason had this program on his shelf for like 10 months before the contest came around. He actually used it. So he bought it. He was a skeptic, you know. And like I say, he went to AdonisIndexSystems.com, bought it, let it on his shelf for 10 months, fought in the forum with John over whether it was feasible or not. Contest comes around, finally jumps in, you know, gets some basic level coaching, finally just kind of suspends that disbelief and just goes for it. And ends up coming in a winner. So, you know, like I say, I mean, there are a lot of guys, and I was just like this too, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure John was the same way. You know, it's very hard to believe that it can really be this simple, but here is a perfect example of how simple it can be. And with that, let's let you listen in on Jason, and we're going to take it away. All right, guys, I am on the phone right now with Jason Haynes, who actually won the burn category and second overall in the last Adonis Index Transformation Contest. And, of course, I've got John Barbin on the line as well. So, Jason, I appreciate you stopping by, man.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here with you guys. I've been listening to the podcast ever since they started coming out, man. I got to admit, they've been quite life-changing, so I want to thank you guys for that.
Oh, no problem, man. No problem at all. So Jason, give us some background, man. How old are you? Where are you from? Kind of some basics.
Well, right now I'm 37, and currently I'm living out in China. It's a small island on the south end of China called Hainan, which is basically a tropical island out in the middle of the sea. We've been out here for about 5 years, 6 years. Came from Los Angeles before that, New Jersey and West Virginia before that. So kind of been around.
Gotcha. So give me some idea size-wise. I mean, when you started out, I mean, well, you're like 5'7", correct?
Yeah, between 5'7", 5'8".
Okay. Yeah, depending on the day and how humid it is outside, right?
Yeah, because, you know, you swell up and stuff if you get too hot. That's right.
There you go. So what? So you had a pretty drastic transformation over that 10 weeks. Where did you go from?
I started at 200, 201, somewhere in there. I know it was 200, 201. I weighed in at 91 kilo. Out here they use kilos, not they use metric, not imperial system.
Right, gotcha. And where'd you end up at when it was over?
78, I believe, was the number.
So it was about
78
30,
kilo.
About 30
pounds lost.
Right. In 3 weeks, that's not bad, my friend.
Ten weeks.
Oh, excuse me, 10 weeks.
No, I'm actually extremely happy about that.
Gotcha. And kind of give us some ideas, but what kind of stuff were you doing before you kind of found out about us, and you know, what kind of goals did you have? What kind of workouts were you doing, eating, you know, that type of jazz? And what kind of results were you getting at the same time?
I just can't help but laugh at this stuff, man, because I fell into the whole category of falling into what everybody else said would be done, what everyone else says you should do. You know, I had my big friends, but, you know, even the ones who are natural, they're just genetic freaks, you know what I'm saying? These are the guys who sit there doing 2 hours a day and stuff like that. And, I mean, they got incredibly strong and everything, but it just wasn't working for me.
Uh-huh.
I had tried everything until that time, from, you know, Bill Starr 5x5 to West Side powerlifting to total body training to the final thing that I was trying, which was an absolute disaster. I mean, it worked, like, everything works for a week or two, you know, a couple weeks. So I thought this was it. This was the perfect end-all thing, was train like an athlete. John, I'm sure you have a couple things to say about that one, right?
Well, I mean, unless you are an athlete, why would you train like one? So, yeah, I mean, that was...
Makes complete sense. I mean, when I read your thing about that, the crabs in the bucket and stuff like that, it's like, you know, how sad is it if you're training to be an athlete and you're just like a Saturday athlete or playing on some kind of, what do you call it, a corporate league or something like that? It's like, man, that is pretty sad if you think about it. But anyway, about that time, I'd actually purchased the Adonis Index when it first came out. What was that, about a year and a half ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was probably March 2008, I think, is when it came out. So, yeah, about 2.5 years ago, or no, 1.5 years ago. Maybe a little bit.
A little over, almost 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I saw it because of your blog, Brad. Somewhere along the line, I was just checking out all the relationship management and all that kind of stuff, and I came across your blog. I don't remember quite how I came across it.
Right.
But there it was. And you had that little ad on the side for Adonis Index. I was like, what in the world is this thing? And I had so many different internet programs and different kinds of, oh my gosh, there's still like 10 of them in my computer that I still haven't used and probably never will again, that are just sitting there that I just wasted my money on. So Adonis went in there originally because it's like, okay, I'll just put it in the schedule of things to do. And as you guys know, once you schedule things and you say, I'll get to it eventually, that's pretty much like saying I'm never going to get to it anyway because I'm putting some other priority first. Well, I'm sure John remembers, I just kept harassing the guy. I feel so bad for this guy for just harassing him about this system. What are you talking about? And then this whole eat less calories thing. And in the meantime, I'm sitting there going on a bulk. Oh, man, I finally decided to bulk. I was sitting at about 155 for years. I just wasn't going anywhere. I tried, weights were going up, but weight wasn't going up, and I said, all right, fine, you know what, all these other sites says you got to sit there and eat 4,000 calories a day at 5'7", yeah, that was really a smart move on my part, but sure, I'll go in there and do it. I told my wife at the time, I was like, not my wife now, but at that time I told my wife, babe, I'm just going to eat a lot. I'm going to get fat, but I'm going to come out of that. I'm going to be bigger. I'm going to be ripped. This is the way it's going to be because all these guys can't be wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, you could tell she wasn't happy about it, but she's like, all right, go for it. So I think I got up to that 200 pounds. It took me like 6 months to get up there. It was like balloon fast even through the wintertime or through the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the best time of year, but it was just like, all right, I finally decided I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for it. Well, next thing you know, you look at yourself going, oh, crap, I look like crap. Mm-hmm. I feel like crap. I can't even look myself in the mirror. I got this big chin under my chin talking. You know, they almost has a mouth of its own talking. And mm-hmm. they're like, what was I doing? What was I possibly thinking? This better be worth it. You know, I better be coming out of here looking like Arnold or something. Never mind, Arnold's over 6 foot tall and I'm only 5'7", right?
Right.
And, started, you know, I don't even know where to go with the story from this point.
Yeah, I remember, you know, John telling me, he was like, man, he goes, I got this guy in the forum, man, and he just won't even do the system. He'll just he just argues with me the whole time about how it's wrong, and it was the longest thing. But it was funny. We found out you jumped in the contest. So what? Tell me this. What, you know, after, you know, say, you know, a year of having this program, or 10 months or whatever it was, you know, the contest rolls around. What was that moment you were just kind of like, you know what, man, I'm just gonna. My phrase right now is suspend disbelief. I'm, you know, just screw it. I'm going to try it. What was that point?
Actually, it's a combination of several things that happened in life, as well as just common sense finally kicking in. Number one, it seemed like a good time to stop spending so much money on food. I mean, it was getting ridiculous when you have a salary in a country that makes you live well, but basically comes out to less than $500 US a month, but in this country it's okay, that's a huge chunk of change to sit there eating 4,000 calories a day. And then you have a family to take care of and bills and stuff like that. It was just getting too tight on money. And then this competition came up, and then I'm also needing to lose weight. Everything just kind of came together at this one moment and said, dude, just go for it. What in the world do you have to lose by trying this and giving it 100% effort?
Right.
That's basically what it came down to.
So was part of it, did you kind of feel like that because we were putting this competition on that, I just thought about this right then when you were just talking, but was part of it in your mind going, well, man, if they're having this competition, this thing's got to work somehow, some way. You know, or else they're gonna get hosed pretty bad because nobody's gonna get any results and they're gonna have any winners.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, first of all, you gotta have enough confidence in the system to sit there and put what, about 2,000 on the line to divvy out to different people.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You gotta have confidence in that program to begin with. Otherwise, you're just gonna lose and lose your money. Of course, that definitely backed it up. That definitely gave it more credibility.
Yeah, that's pretty funny because I was just kind of thinking about this. I was like, if I'm you and I'm thinking and going through this, and then
see, I find that completely ironic, just because I'm like, of course it's gonna work. You just have to do it.
Right. Yeah. But you know what the funny thing about it? Okay. Well, tell me this. Let's back up because I don't want to spoil what we got from some of the other guys. Let me talk to you about kind of your experiences and things like that. But and then I'll kind of tell you what some of the other guys found too. So you decided to jump in the contest. You said, screw it. I've been arguing with John too much. I've been giving him a hard time.
I felt so bad after a while. I really did.
Well, yeah, once it started working.
Now, I'm even talking about during the time I'm arguing with the guy. I'm like, man, this guy just has so much patience. And then eventually John's like, look, just give it a fair try. You can almost hear his voice in his email. He's probably like, pecking at the keyboard so hard right now, just like, look, you can see like the teeth shavings as he's grinding his teeth or something.
Oh, he's been through three laptops over the past. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. He might.
No, he was actually. It was really a credit to you, John. I'm going to pay you some compliment right now. Just don't let go to your head, brother. It's a credit to you for how patient you are with all of us, man. It's just a matter of deprogramming, and man, I can't imagine how much of this stuff you got to go through. Seriously,
it's so pervasive throughout the entire industry that it's kind of standard hat now. It's just sort of, you can't confront people as much as, I mean, I know I got a slightly confrontational with you and Burton at some point, but
really, all right.
But you know what I mean? Like you have to be very like kind of accommodating to actually help somebody. You can't really confront them too badly, otherwise they'll just turn away. So I'm kind of learning. I'm learning how to reach people because they've had so much of this stuff drilled into their heads. And I used to be that way too, like for a long time. And that's what I'm trying to tell people. I'm like, no, I get it. Like all the marketing messages you're believing in, I wrote them. Like that's why I know where you're at, because I was one of the worst of them all for writing that stuff when I, you know, in all the different positions I've held and, you know, went in and out of the supplement industry and stuff like it. I know where that dogma comes from. That's why I kind of am so matter-of-factual with what I say now, because I get where that stuff came from. And I also can tell that some of the other online, you know, marketers, they're reading and regurgitating stuff that we wrote 10 years ago. So it's kind of how I don't know. I guess it's hard for me to put what I know into your mind in one conversation. That's why it takes time.
What I really appreciate is, I mean, you started to take those concepts like protein synthesis and all this stuff, and all this stuff has a really cool-sounding thing that makes it just feel like we're just getting stacked and just huge while doing it, and then you break it down going, this isn't quite what they make it sound like. It's like, what? You know, you can almost feel like the reset button trying to hit, but it goes back to the old way. It's like twitching in your head, you know, that splinter in your mind, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and it just takes time to get that splinter out, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I don't know if we've even talked about, you know, how the podcast even came around. I mean, it's basically because of, you know, the conversations that he and I and he, me, him, and Pelon would have after, you know, they would be in the forums and, you know, Pelon with East.beat would have, you know, get complaints and stuff because, you know, his biggest complaint about East.beat is that people would read it and be like, well, I already know that. I want my money back. And he's like, seriously? He goes, that's my biggest thing. And people would say, well, I already know that. I want my money back. You didn't tell me anything new. And he's like, well, you know, he's like, well, damn. And so we have these conversations, and we get in some really deep stuff about, you know, psychology and about why people feel like they need this. And, you know, finally, John was just like, man, we just need to start recording these conversations because there's some good stuff that comes out. And that's pretty much all what you guys hear recorded is pretty much how we've talked, you know, in one-on-one conversations. I mean, nothing's changed. It's the exact same thing. So except now we're just recording it and adding a little bit of, you know, structure to it, but not a lot, man.
No, it's just kind of there. We've talked like that for the past year and a half. It's just now everyone can listen in.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So tell us this. Okay, so you finally said, you know what, screw it, I'm going to do it. Walk us through your 10 weeks. You know, what kind of things did you do? Did you do anything on top of the workouts, on top of the base? How was your diet? I mean, what was your kind of overall structure?
Well, actually, I actually bought Eat Stop Eat when it first came out. It just sounded too simple, and a year before, I actually leaned down to about 155 with that, but I had no real muscle definition in my shoulders and upper body. It was all down in my lower body because, you know, when you start training bodybuilding style or powerlifting style, they always emphasize squats and deads and all that kind of stuff, so mm-hmm. I really was lacking in the upper body. But I got down to a pretty lean, but my upper body looked like, I don't know, alfalfa or something like that, basically, for my height. Now, refresh my memory, I just lost
it. The 10 weeks, just walk us through the 10 weeks.
10 weeks, all right. So I went back to Eat Stop Eat during that time. I found it to be really easy in terms of just mentally. It's just like, just don't eat. It's that simple. All right, cool. And it's on a training day, and you can drink coffee or whatever, you know, coffee, tea, this kind of thing. All right, I'm down with this. Let's get on this. Now, for the first, what, 2-3 weeks or something like this, I had never worked a single body part, much less my upper body, that often during that kind of time. I mean, it was turning into 4 times a week, and then I added the specializations on top of that, the chest specialization to be exact. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it wasn't pain, like an injury pain, but it was like my body and my upper body going, what in the heck are you doing, man? I don't want to do this stuff. I was getting a little depressed, actually, because I saw my strength going down. I saw, because, you know, you're using stuff more and more, and your body just is trying to compensate. But after that 4-week period, things started to kick back up, and I was immediately right back up to where I was to begin with. Uh-huh. And even sometimes this stuff went up higher. It just like took these huge jumps. And I was like, oh man, I was so stoked by that. It's like, all right, let's keep going.
Yeah. It sounds like to me, I mean, John, you could probably elaborate on it. It sounds like you had to condition yourself into the actual program.
Big time.
Yeah, that basically, yeah. I mean, you're going to have the soreness and the sort of like the way you described it, that just sounds like the getting over the hump and getting accustomed to the volume.
Yeah,
that's. I think you told me that on the forum one time.
It's not. There's no such thing. Well, there is such thing as overtraining, but most people never get to it. It's under conditioning. You just have to ramp up into handling more and more volume.
Yeah. If you want overtraining, listen to Pierre's interview. That kid went nuts.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I have no idea. I can't wait to hear this because you know what? You just
intrigued. It's good stuff.
Oh, it's hilarious.
So how did you feel? After the 4 week point, did you just roll along and then with the one booster added to it, or where did you go from there?
Well, I started actually because my chest really needed to be brought up. I hated that thing. So what I did was I actually added the chest series. After talking to you, John, you said that you can just add it basically wherever you wanted. So I actually added into off days.
Sure.
So I would train the Adonis like Monday, Tuesday, throw in a chest on Wednesday, take Thursday off because I was just too busy on that day to get anything in. Friday, Saturday, Adonis, and then on Sunday evening I'd hit in the second chest specialization and do it all over again for weeks and weeks and weeks. I think right now I'm in the middle of my third time through it, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I didn't throw in any extra cardio because I just didn't feel like it. It was just like these workouts are plenty of cardio for me at this point.
So you dropped 30 pounds with absolutely no cardio at all. No walking, no treadmill, no nothing, basically.
Absolutely no treadmill, no bicycling, no running, no jogging, no sprinting. Just through the Adonis exercises and through the training and diet. Of course, number one is diet. Eventually, right. As I started to lose weight towards the end, I'd feel good. So, you know, I'd throw in some of my martial art training at the end for 15 minutes just because, hey, I feel good. Let's get going. You know, and it wasn't even anything that had to do with, hey, I got to keep training. It's like, hey, I feel like doing this. This is cool.
Right.
And even then, that was like week 9 or 10. So, I mean, that really made negligible impact overall.
Sure. As far as diet you were saying you jumped in on Eat Stop Eat. Kind of give me an idea. Were you fasting once a week, twice a week? How was that going?
Let me start with this. I started off on this thing at 4,000 calories, right?
Right.
And then I dropped it to 3,000. I saw, well, nothing's happening here. I need to drop it down. And then we start talking about the BMR and the RMR and stuff like that on the site. So I dropped it to 2,000. All right, this should be enough. You know, according to these calculators, that's close. And then I read what John was saying when he was getting down to his golden was that he was doing 1,400 a day. Then I thought about, John's over 6 foot tall. He's like 4 inches taller than me. And he's doing this much, and I'm doing 2,000. Wait, there's something majorly wrong here. So I dropped it to 1,700 a day plus two fasts a week. The whole time I was doing two fasts a week.
Right.
And eventually it was just like, wait a minute, John's still at 1,400. I'm at 17. I'm just going to drop it to 15. I've been maintaining a 1,500 a day plus 2 days of fasting a week, which brings me to a little bit over 1,000 a day.
Right. Yeah. And is that current to date right now, or is that just throughout the contest?
I did relax some after the competition. I started eating a little bit more, but I was able to maintain and keep where I was at. I didn't really lose much. I really didn't. But my AI was still increasing. My waist was still going down gradually.
Sure.
Now that it's been enough time, I felt like I took a little vacation without going crazy. I have started to get back into it again. I started to eat the smallest meal in the first meal of the day, and then just enjoy this big meal at the end of the day, three meals a day. And I'm doing two fasts a week, and absolutely no problem.
So tell me this. So give me the emotion or your reaction to how low the calories really have to be.
No shit.
So,
that was my first question.
So it.
That was my first thing.
No.
It's like, you have got to be kidding. It's that low?
Yeah.
You have got to be kidding. And then I saw your pictures plus you. I actually saw some pictures. I don't remember how I saw it at that point, considering what internet problems we have out here. But just that blog or something that we saw where you said just how low you. It was after a podcast. Just how low your calories were, and then I pictured how tall you are and stuff. It's like, what? That was just like an earth-shattering thing, man.
Yeah, people don't get it. I always refer to, and I actually might do an interview with a buddy of mine who's a big bodybuilder, and he's 6'5", 350 pounds. And he's one of the largest human beings I've ever met. And the last time he dieted down for a bodybuilding show, he was down to 1,700 calories a day. And think about how large of a human that is. So,
and how long did he do that for, if you don't mind me asking?
He did a 16-week cut down that started, I think, the most he ever ate on his cut down was 2,500. and tapering all the way down to 17. And we're talking about a 350-pound man. So if any at 6'5" and his back is, you know, 4 feet across, he's just this big. I can't even describe.
He's just behemoth. He's just a behemoth.
He's just a large mammal. So, but what I'm saying is, I can't, like, he's the biggest person I've ever met, and that's how low he ate. So nobody gets it. Like, without seeing him and having him, you know, seeing him diet down and seeing what he ate, no one else. I can't really put in other people's minds like how low it really is. So for me, I'm one third. I'm a third of that guy's size. I don't know how. I'm half his size, and there's no way I can eat what he eats to cut down. So I mean, I had to go below what he would do.
See, I need my friends out here to hear this story, because I got two friends. They're both about 50 years old, and each of them's weighing about 250, 280 pounds, and they're about my height actually. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're like, yeah, as long as we go bicycling once a week and keep our calories to 2,500 or less, we'll be losing a lot of weight. And it's like, okay, well, you know, in my head, because I'm done talking to people about this stuff, because it's just, mm-hmm. it's frustrating for me, because people look at me going, yeah, well, you're only 37, just wait till you're 40 or 50, and then your body changes and your metabolism slows and all this kind of stuff, and just excuses and excuses and excuses. It's just like, all right, you know what, I'm just exiting this conversation. But they really need to be hearing this stuff, because they just don't get it. They don't want to get it. I think people don't want to get it.
That's a recurring theme. A lot of people just want an excuse. I think that's why people go after the more complicated stories about how this works, so they have an excuse to point at of why it didn't work for them. And that's a recurring theme we're getting. Like, you know, everyone we've talked to so far has people in their life, and I find it unbelievable that, you know, you're living proof that something worked, and they still don't want to believe. Like, you know, if they ask, you know, you lost 30 pounds in 10 weeks, and they'll say, how'd you do it? And you're like, oh, I just ate less. And they're like, nope, not possible. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I actually just...
Well, here's this one. They came up to me, like, towards the end of the transformation competition, and they're like, dude, you've lost a lot of weight. I'm like, thanks, man. It's totally worth it. But once you get... It's a little difficult to begin with, but once you get into it, it's just a lifestyle change, and you go on with life. It's really no big deal. Right. And they're like, yeah, that's awesome. That's great. And then after it, while I'm sitting here at the, you know, at second place and everything like that, and they just fall back to the same excuses, like, well, you know, you've been that way for what, a month? Well, just wait for a year from now, yo-yo diet, you're going to go back to where you were and all this stuff. It's like, that's because people don't adapt to their new situation. They don't sit there and realize that they have to change their life instead of just having some quick fix. And once you change your life and you've actually made that step to do these things, and you realize that I'm at a new place, I need to adapt, I need to change, I can't go back to the way I used to be, it's not that difficult. But they just don't get that.
Well, the thing with the yo-yo that I don't think a lot of people understand is that, number one, they have no idea how many calories they're eating on a daily basis anyway, so they figure that, you know, I'll diet down, but then, you know, once I diet down, lose all the weight, I can just go back to eating the way I was. The problem is,
that's exactly it.
The way they were eating was what got them there in the first place. So they never got to the fact where they figured out where their equilibrium point was, and that's the problem. That's why people yo-yo. It's not because it's a crash diet or anything. I mean, if you realize that this is what it is, then it won't happen to you if you're cognizant of that. That end game, and that's what we've been saying for the longest time. It's like, look, if you realize that there's a possibility for you to yo-yo, or for you to jump off the cliff or whatever, you know, and start gobbling up food at the end because you can't help it. If you realize that and you have that in your mind, well, then it won't control you. So
that's what I mean by sitting there and you know, changing your lifestyle. Once you've gotten to that range, you can't, like you just said, you just can't go back to the way you used to be. You need to up to where you are and make those changes based upon where you are right now or at that point.
Speaking of lifestyle, I mean, and this for me, and I know with John too, but I mean, when you're saying lifestyle, I mean, the lifestyle you're living right now isn't nearly as cumbersome as it was, is it?
Oh my goodness, no. I have more money, I have more time, I have more enjoyment out of life, man.
Yeah, because I mean, you're not trying to like buy 4,000, 5,000 calories worth of food, eat it 6, 7, 8 times a day, you know, work out 2 to 5 hours a day or whatever it is. So, I mean, that, again, common theme. So, you know, you're basically just saying the same things that everybody else is saying. I got results. I spent less time doing it. I've got a my life is better now because of it. I get to hang out. What's your wife think?
Man, you know, well, let's just say she's happy. She's got no problems with it. She loves it. It's better than before. Even, I mean, she married me when I was already fat. So I can't say that I can't say that there's anything wrong with that. You know what I'm saying? So she just notices, man. You know, every now and then I'm sitting there and she'll squeeze my tricep, going, "Wow, tricep," or something like that. And I'm sitting there like, "Oh yeah," you know, something like that.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So any other experiences like that? I mean, people just saying things, doing things. I mean, any confidence builders by people, like, noticing anything? I mean, any Adonis experiences, I guess you could say?
You know, it is so hard to just limit it to one. If you ask me to tell you one, I don't know which one I would choose, to be honest with you.
Right.
My job's been affected. I teach at a university out here. Uh-huh. And I can simply say that just the reaction of the students is much different. I can't even explain it. Now, I got to admit, probably some of it has to do with the confidence that I've built from losing the weight and the way I carry myself and all this kind of stuff that goes with that. Uh-huh. But at the same time, having the
that's all legit.
The physical. Oh, absolutely. And because there's also just from the physical stature standpoint, you know, you stand profile and you don't have your belly going over your belt anymore. That's a huge deal, guys. It really isn't the way that these kids will treat. I say kids. I mean, you know, they're college students, 20, 21 years old. Mm-hmm. But they just see that, especially out here where they have in this country where they have an image of people from other countries all being fat, McDonald's fed, you know, huge guys. And I hate to say it, a majority of guys I see out here are that way. And then all of a sudden, I ain't one of those guys. Well, I'm an English teacher. I'm not like one of those guys. And it's a huge deal, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand. Go ahead.
And then I get going to the gym's a brand new experience. I work out at a small, it's kind of a dirty gym. I got no problem with that. It's kind of small. And it's a public gym, but they have a lot of police officers and other kinds of law officials going in there to work out. And just the amount of friendliness and respect I get from these guys now that I'm, you know, you can see some, what's that word I'm looking for? The cuts in the shoulder, striations, that's the word, isn't it?
Striations.
The striations in the shoulders, the added vascularity in the arms that are coming up and stuff like that. These guys, you know, they're taking notice. And sometimes we'll sit there and they've invited me to come over and practice their self-defense with them and stuff like that. And it's because it looks like I can, you know, physically, from a physical standpoint, it looks like I can handle it with these guys. Uh-huh. You know, it's not that I'm going to sit there and suck wind and all this kind of stuff. I can actually hang with them now. And it's just been a total life change in just about everything, guys.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I'm going to relate a story to this. I mean, and maybe some guys will understand. But, I mean, you're talking about this from a physical standpoint, but from a lot of and other standpoints, like a social standpoint, it's a lot of times, like, if you're going to hang out with somebody who has a lot of value, like somebody that's popular or whatever, if they're going to hang out with you, they're going to want to know if you can handle yourself around their type of crowd. So it's it's kind of the same thing you're talking about. It's like, you know, okay, they notice that I have this, I look like I can handle myself and can carry myself and things like that. Rest assured, it's not just your physical, you know, physique that they're looking at. It's the way you carry yourself, how you're walking around the place. I mean, these things, it's like your vibe or
presence.
I don't want to say it's your presence, kind of like your swagger. I mean, I'd like to
take that just a little bit further to mean that you're not a jerk about it, too. That you carry yourself in that way, but at the same time, you're not a jerk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and what you'll find is the more and more you get closer and closer. I mean, and like I say, I mean, if you're back on now, so you keep dropping and keep building the way you are. I mean, you'll start noticing that that like that report I sent out, every single person that's won, we've talked about this, but you know, you really have to start toning yourself down a little bit because people start to get intimidated. They start to, you know, kind of have to watch yourself.
It's like an
bit.
Inverse relationship. As you tone your body up, you have to tone your what you're doing down a bit because you don't need to.
I'm actually glad, Brad, that you sent that out because after I read that, that answered a problem that I had, which was among relationships among students and other people out here. It's just like, you know, Jason, we really don't want to talk to you these days because we think that you're, you know, we believe that you think you're too cool for us.
Mm-hmm. Simply because after you went through the transformation?
Well, you know, before there was I hate to put it this way, but I put a distance between myself and everyone else because I put a value on myself as lower than everyone else because I didn't look that good. Mm. I actually didn't have a confidence in myself. And then when I started to slim up and look better and stuff like that, I didn't check that inner part. I didn't even think about that. The outer was what I was focusing on, but the inner was changing with the outer. And then eventually it turned into, wait a minute, I have to change the inner too. I got to go back. I got to take a couple steps away from myself, away from where I am, and see what's going on in that inner part.
Yeah, you got to kind of re-engage, and it's at that point you kind of got to check your assumptions about yourself.
That
happens. I mean, it happens a lot, actually. It's especially I see it all the time, and you know, I've been in this type of industry for a really long time. I mean, it's over 10 years, and you know, I've literally talked to thousands of people face to face, and you know, you start seeing people change and seeing people react differently, and you know, some of the jokes that you know somebody that's overweight that was saying that was kind of a cocky, you know, it was funny, but you know, it was really toeing the line. You know, once they started getting in a lot better shape, those same jokes, they weren't toeing the line anymore. They were over.
It's turned into arrogance. It's turned into cocky arrogance.
Yeah, exactly. And the person is the same, but the perception is much different. And so I've seen that, and I was there. I mean, I just didn't realize that what was going on. It took a guy telling me. There was a girl at one point that you know, looked at me as I was walking across the gym somewhere, and she looked at my friend, and she goes, "Oh, my God, is he like the most arrogant, cocky son of a bitch you've ever seen?" And and he was like, "That guy? Are you crazy? He's like the coolest guy I know." And he came and told me that. But then he told her, he goes, "No, you got to understand, when he's here, he's all business. He's handling stuff or whatever." But see, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize. Once he told me that, that's when I got it. This was about 6 years ago when he told me this. And I kind of realized, I was like, holy crap, I need to be aware of this. Because how many other people have said the same thing?
Oh, I know. I used to just do all these cocky things, too, just because, you know, it was fun to bust people up. You know, it was fun to bust with them, play them, and play with them and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're so blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know. You know, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, you start to change your physique, you change your attitude and everything like that, and suddenly those lines no longer seem like, they're no longer funny. It's more like, I don't know, it's almost like you're being a prick. You know, exactly. You're being one of those, you're just being, I'm better than all you guys, and you guys are nothing. But that's not what you meant, but that's what they perceive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you need to be totally aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John,
it's a hard lesson.
Yeah, well, you were saying, I don't know if we talked about this in podcast. I keep forgetting things we talk about in the podcast or whatever we talk about just on the phone. But you were saying that you have a couple of big bodybuilding guys that are actually – They
overplay it. Yeah, like that huge guy. I was telling you about. I mean, he'll scare. Like he's a big, intimidating dude, and everybody's scared of him just because of how big he is. I've known him for 10 years. I've known him since undergrad, and he's younger than me. I used to pick on him like when he was younger, even though he's huge. Almost kind of little brothered him, and like you know, when he came to the gym, I'm like, oh, who the hell does this guy think he is? And I sort of alpha maled him a bit and all that, but once he became as big as he is, he is very polite, very accommodating, really sense kind of the gentle giant thing, like very soft spoken, and you know, until you actually hear him even speak, people are intimidated and scared, and the minute he opens his mouth, you're like, oh, he's just a very nice, polite, you know, soft-spoken person. And you can't be boisterous. You can't be the Chris Farley type and rap in a body that big. It just doesn't work.
It's just too much stimulus or something. I don't quite get what it is exactly, but it's just like it's just too much power coming at you, both physically
personality-wise.
There you go.
Yeah, I've always had this saying: if you have to say you are, you aren't, and you know some of the stuff that, you know, when you're kind of going overboard and you already look the part. I mean, it basically is like, okay, something's wrong. This person must not really be cool if they're having to act this hard. So that was kind of my big take-home message right there when I wrote that report, because I know I've noticed, you know, in my own life and other people's lives and everybody we've talked to in this contest, I mean, they're seeing the exact same thing. So I'm glad that I wasn't just kind of blowing smoke out of my ass and that I was actually onto something. You know, because, I mean, sometimes you got a feeling and you talk to things, people, but it's nice to kind of get it real-time verified with other people. I was just putting it out there to say, hey, just be aware of this, but that's really cool. So,
and what I really think is cool, Brad, is that you've kind of left it to us to express that you guys haven't been, you know, you guys haven't hinted that we have to say these things or anything, but I just want to tell everyone out there who's listening that this is just, you know, guys free talking. There's no plan, there's no nothing like that. This is just common things that the guys who are in the competition have in common that just came about naturally because of what's going on.
Oh, sure. And I'll tell you this. We made a prediction at the very beginning of this contest. We said the person who follows the contest the best will win. And so far Ron followed the best and he won. Everybody else, I mean, Pierre kind of overtrained like a madman.
You know, I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, it's great.
And then Tristan got a little crazy with his diet, so that kind of set him behind.
Yeah, exactly. But Ron pretty much, you know, from the start, just kind of nailed it down and went. And it sounds like you were close. I mean, you basically just followed the basic plan and added a couple of things in, and thus you're, you know, guess what, you're in.
The only thing I really changed eventually was just like. Well, even then, the things that I changed happened after the competition was over, because Byrne goes into the circuits and stuff like that. You know, our gym doesn't have a stability ball, so I had to use an ab wheel kind of thing. You know, just small changes like that had to happen, just adapt, you know. But even that didn't even have any impact on the competition because it was after the fact.
Yeah, and, you know, another common thread is that I don't think Ron really had this, but everybody else pretty much had some big-time reservations at the beginning as far as, you know, what it was. And then they just said, you know what, there's a competition here. There's some pressure. Pressure was a big key end goal. And people were like, all right, well, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to take their word for it, do what they say, and just jump in, kind of just have some faith. I know that's kind of a tough way to put it, but it's kind of the way it was.
And, you know, but if you realize what we're putting our faith in otherwise – I'm sitting here putting my faith in powerlifting methods for bodybuilding gains, which is complete fallacy, you know. Or I'm putting my faith in training like an athlete to get the physique I want. Or I'm putting my faith in something, and I'm already putting myself fully in faith that that's not good, that that is going to work anyway. So it's just like, well, why would I put my faith in this just as much as I'm putting my faith in the other things? And I got to admit, you guys, this is the one thing that hasn't let me down.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So, well, I'll tell you what, we're about to close out because we've got a lot of stuff going on, and, man, this has been a great interview. But, you know, what would you say to the other guys who are looking to kind of change their bodies and, you know, what have you learned from all of this, from this whole thing, more specifically the contest itself, but just from this whole experience you've had?
That's a big question, man. I'm not quite I need a minute to think about that, actually. What have I learned the most during this time?
Well, I mean, how about easier, what would you just say to other guys?
Yeah, in your situation, same guys, burn. You know, burn guys or whatever. What would be your best advice?
You know what? Save yourself time, save yourself, you know, stress. Save yourself just a headache trying to figure stuff out. And I'm saying this with nothing but truth, because this is what I wish I had done. Just shut up and do it. It's calories in versus calories out. It's adding in the exercise. If you can get a fast in there, gut up and do it. It sucks for the first 2 weeks. Just do it. And you know what? You got no regrets after it's over. And, man, just life keeps changes, and life just keeps getting better and better after you've made that decision and you've got jumped in with both feet.
So let me ask you this.
You can't stick your toes in the water and say, okay, I'm going to gingerly go in here. Just do it.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, Jason. Do you feel like you got this part of your life handled?
Not fully. I still have a little way to go, probably another 15 pounds to lose and stuff like that. But I'll tell you what, man, it's on the way. You know what I'm saying?
But you got the process handled. That's what I mean.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Gotcha. Gotcha, man. John, you got anything else you want to add in, buddy?
No, that was great. I mean, that was really, really insightful, and it was another take and a good take on kind of the whole process.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that I didn't realize this, but pretty much, you know, obviously Pierre didn't. Actually, Pierre bought Eat Stop Eat too, even though he's thin as a rail. But that's how he found Adonis, was through Eat Stop Eat, which kind of blew my mind. But it's funny because every single person has been fasting, even though we didn't say this is what you had to do. And even though that's not what you've been doing, John, with your cut down, pretty much everybody has included some fasting in. And, you know, that's not surprising considering that in some of the other contests that are on the Internet, and we won't kind of name names, but the people that win those contests actually use Eat Stop Eat as well. So it's kind of funny.
One thing I found really interesting about this, though, was I didn't know that you were the guy who worked on the Adonis program. I didn't know that you were the researcher behind Eat Stop Eat, you know, all this kind of stuff. This all came in after the fact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Brad Peel and me both worked on Eat Stop Eat and Adonis. So he's sort of...
Sorry, Brad Peel. I'm sorry, brother.
Well, no, he takes care of Eat Stop Eat, and I kind of take care of Adonis. But at their roots, we kind of both worked on both of them together.
Yeah, it was kind of a decision to, you know, one person kind of face one and one face the other. And, you know,
each one has their own baby.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, but the funny thing about it is Pilon's the one that's, I mean, he's the one that's got the women's measurements almost down pat for the Venus Index. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where we're almost finished with that. I mean, we're almost finished coming up with our framework for it, and then we're going to spend probably the rest of this year collecting data on it.
Hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, it's really kind of a three-headed snake in a way. It's just where the somebody just claims the credit, but really the credit kind of goes, it's kind of everybody, because it's a really big brainstorm, I guess you could say. So.
Well, my thanks to everyone, you three guys, for all that work. Thanks a lot.
Oh man, it's not a problem, man.
Well, thanks to you for taking us up on the challenge with the contest and then coming through.
Thanks for sticking with me through all my doubts and scoffing and arguments.
Yeah, but it was worth it. It was worth it.
Yeah, after 10 months, man. Come on.
And let's stop thanking each other. We sound like a commercial.
All right, yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, it's, hey, man. You know what? I keep saying life has no edit button. It just is what it is. So. All right, Jason. Well, I really appreciate it. We're going to let you go, man. We will talk to you later.
See you guys around.
All righty. All right, so we finished up the interview with Jason, and, you know, John, it's really interesting. One of the things I want to kind of bring up really quickly is that we're noticing a trend in these interviews, and if people have listened to the first two and then finally this one, it's the fact that pretty much everyone is just a huge skeptic from the very beginning. Then they go and try to go down the path of chasing more with more and trying to outdo what they eat and outdo and do more than what we kind of talk about. And then what happens, they end up beating themselves up. And finally, through some type of, you know, either they just realize it or they're like, man, this isn't working. They finally just kind of relax and do everything we tell them to do, like specifically the way it's laid out, and they get the results they're after. But it's almost like everyone so far has been going through this like gauntlet or this like trial by fire to get to the point where they're like, okay, fine, tell me what I need to do, and then they do it and it works.
Yeah, I don't know why this industry, where when it comes to health and fitness, people think that, I don't know, people become their own little experimenters on themselves. I guess it's fun to try, and it's there's this feeling that there's things always have to be, something has to be added to your life to make a difference or make a positive difference. So, like, I think we talked about this before, like, as you get older, you know, your life becomes more complex in all areas. Like, there's, your house gets bigger, the things you have become more, now, you know, like, maybe you have you have a degree, then you have an advanced degree, you make more money, you eat more food than when you were a kid. Like, everything just seems to be, like, more in all areas. You have more relationships, you have bigger relationships, more stuff going on in them, you just own more stuff. But like in this case, less is better, and even more information doesn't help here either. Like, less information even helps. So this one particular area, people, I mean, you don't do it with your car or anything. Like you don't need to know more about it. I don't know why people think that, you get in your car and it goes. You don't need to know any more about that. Same thing with exercise and dieting. There's very minimal things you need to know for it to work. There's all kinds of stuff you just don't need to know about. But I think people just feel like knowing more might make them more empowered to do more or something, and then don't pay the simplicity and the rest and the minimum amount that needs to be done. They don't pay attention to that, and that's actually, you need to rest. There's only so much you can do. There's only so much of stress you can take to get results. So it's kind of like coming to terms with that, and then trusting that in some cases doing a bit less is still going to get a lot done.
Right. I mean, I guess, you know, you brought up the car thing, which is really interesting. The way I was just thinking about it right then, especially when it comes to steroids, and even people's perceptions of what they need to do. I mean, let's say you take a dragster, right? Which, for all intents and purposes, that could be construed as a high performance athlete on steroids. I mean, yeah, that dude's going to need different fuels and more of it probably, you know, to do things. I mean, he's just got more going on. And
yeah, totally. Like, the marketing in this area, a lot of the advice comes from bodybuilders and competitors and athletes who are using stuff you're not using. So maybe they do need 300 grams of protein. Maybe they do need to eat more food. Maybe they do need to do more, I don't know, extra cardio or something. But if you're clean, why the hell would you be taking advice from somebody who isn't? Which basically is most of the mainstream media in this area. That's where it's coming from.
It's like when I was younger. Like, I've got two cars. You know, I've got the black car, you know, which is on the gas tank, and in the owner's manual, I guess, because it has higher horsepower, it specifies in there, it says, use, you know, 91 plus grade fuel, right? And so I'm like, okay, I'll put that in there. But when I was younger, and I also had this little red truck, and, you know, I've had other cars in the past or something that did not require that type of fuel in the past. But I would still always put 93 in them, always. Even though it wasn't necessary, or in fact, I mean, it didn't do anything for the guy. I didn't notice any changes in gas mileage or anything like that when I switched back.
No, all it did was waste money.
Exactly. That's the point I'm getting to. I mean, I would say for, oh God, 10 years. Think about it. 10 years of putting premium fuel in a car that doesn't even come close to needing it.
No, dude, you probably don't even want to add up how much money you blew.
Sure, and at least probably $5,000 minimum.
For no reason at all.
Yeah, for no reason.
Yeah.
For no perceived increase in performance or the health of my car.
Right, which I guess comes back down to goals. What was the goal of doing that? Was it for the performance or the health of the car? Because if it was and it wasn't required, why would you be doing it?
Right, I thought it was going to make the car faster. I thought it'd be better for the car. And part of it was snob appeal.
Yeah, I guess, sure.
I put premium in my car.
Mm. I don't know. I think people just struggle with the idea that I don't know. Maybe it makes people feel like a little less in control by not doing more, like thinking there was more they should have done. Mm-hmm. And not accept, like, when it comes to your body, it comes back to homeostasis. There's only so many things you can do to it until you just push it over an edge.
Right.
You know, kind of like, you know, we saw that with Pierre. He just did too much.
Right. And then the thing is that at that point, the way your body gets even is to break down and put you in bedridden mode.
You just can't keep going, right? There's only so much stress you can take, and then that's it. I guess part of it, and also I guess this all gets back to, like we said, the goal and what was, you know, whatever kind of training you're doing, what's the goal? Like, be honest with yourself about the goal, and once you recognize your goal, then do something to get to that goal. And you know, instead of, you know, this same with the implied goal thing, like people get caught in a bulking cycle for, the bulk thing, I just still don't get, because at what point do you come out of your bulking cycle? Like, at what point are you big enough?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come down out of it, how far down are you gonna allow yourself to go until you're uncomfortable again? And you know, it, obviously that's a circular argument. So it's kind of like you got to get out of the mentality that bulking does anything, because it doesn't. It just makes you fat, and then you're just fat for as long as you're in your bulking phase. And you know, I guess, if you're going to take your shirt off, your only excuse is, well, I'm bulking, which is kind of a cop-out.
Right. I mean, tell a chick you're bulking.
Yeah, and she'll be like, that's stupid.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you're fat.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, no, I mean, I hate to be, like, blunt like that, but that's kind of the reality. I mean, it's like.
Well, yeah.
And
it's,
again.
It's not kind of the reality. It is the reality.
And getting bulky just makes your pecker smaller. It all revolves around that again.
Well, it makes it look smaller.
Well, no, I mean, if it pulls out on your belly, isn't there a ligament in there that like kind of shrinks it down too, or something, or is that urban myth?
I don't know. That might be urban myth.
I think I'm doing good now. That I'm cutting down. I went from an inch to like an inch and a half, so I'm all right, dude.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny that we're kind of going in that, because it's like. You know, when anytime you see a result in something, I guess this kind of goes with the bulking thing, is like, you know, you see the weight on the scale increase and you're like, sweet, I'm getting bigger. And that's where you quit observing. As soon as people get a result in that regard, they quit observing everything else.
Yeah. You're getting bigger in what shape and in how, in where on your body you're getting bigger, and how bloated are you looking? Yeah. I mean, You cherry pick, or you choose to focus on the result that you're interested in and completely disregard what's causing it.
Right. Like, for instance, let's say losing muscle mass. I usually use my hands and I can feel my arm, and I have an idea, like, because my hand can span across, like, from thumb to middle finger or whatever, and I can tell when my arm's getting smaller.
Oh, right. Yeah, now, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? Like, and I can tell right now it's getting smaller, but I know that it's not because my muscle is technically getting weaker, because the other day, I mean, I just 2 days ago, I was doing rows with the same weight I've been doing rows with, you know, 1 or 2.5. That hadn't changed, you know. I only got 2 less reps, but you know, obviously I'm eating a lot less calories. So let's look at some of the other reasons. If it's because everybody's so afraid of losing muscle mass, and so that's a prominent thing they're thinking, oh my God, my muscle's going away. Let's ask some better questions. What else could it be? Let's leave muscle as, let's say, the actual muscle tissue itself as a constant. Well, what else could it be that would cause it to decrease? I mean, we've obviously got water. The fat that's inside the muscle that could be going away.
Subcutaneous fat that's beneath the skin.
Right.
And then in extracellular water. So there's, you know, interstitial water. So basically inflammation, fat, and intramuscular fat. All of those things. And when you're on a calorie restriction and you're actually losing fat, those are all the things that you lose. It's not muscle tissue. Oh, and the muscle itself, some intramuscular water might be slightly depleted. So your muscles might not be as voluminous as they could be until you go back to calorie maintenance. So you haven't lost any protein out of your muscle or the actual tissue itself. You're just in a lower water state and a lower fat state, which is good. Who the hell wants to have extra fat and water on them? So, if your arms look slightly smaller but they're more ripped and denser looking, why wouldn't you want that? Why would you want a fatter, smoother arm that's 1 inch bigger on a tape measure versus a harder, leaner, tighter, more muscular looking arm? So right. It's the trade-off between leanness and bigness. It's what we come back to. It's the looking good with or without a shirt on. So it's up to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, just kind of doing the math. I mean, one of the things that people forget about, even when it comes to, you know, measuring around your waist and, you know, coming around your arm, I mean, you're talking about a circumference. So if you think about it, I mean, just doing some quick math, and I didn't even use pi, I just used 3. But let's say if your arm measurement decreased by an inch, right? Mm-hmm. It just decreased by an inch. Well, if you do the math, that means radius-wise, let's say if your arm was a complete, you know, circle, which is not, but what that would mean is that you're either under the skin somewhere, your arm size decreased by 3/16 of an inch all the way around.
Oh, yeah, it's not much, yeah.
Yeah, no, not much at all.
Right, no, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so I mean that can be explained by a lot.
It's negligible. Oh yeah, we're splitting split hairs is what we're doing. Like there's, and I mean unless you have access to a metabolic lab or a body composition lab, you're never going to be able to actually know exactly how much mass you have. So it's pointless to even think about it because you can't measure it. Like you're arguing about unknowns. You're arguing about an unknown. You have no way of actually getting. A measurement on. Besides using the scale and some body measurements, you'll never actually be able to figure it out because weight and strength aren't good measurements. But like body weight's not a good measurement. Strength isn't a good measurement. Circumferences are a good measurement, but they also don't change that much. So, like, I don't get what people think is happening. Like when they lose body fat and are afraid of muscle, because in all of the known measurements you can take, you can more or less show that your muscles aren't changing size. So it's like a fear based on nothing, I guess. And without a body composition lab, you have absolutely no way of quantifying any minute changes there might be. And let's, like you just said, it's fractions of an inch. Let's say you did lose a few grams of overall body protein. Well, like what does that mean? And who cares if you look leaner?
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is that when people compare, because I think a lot of people just can compare very broad strokes of research and information. So they'll say if you go on a diet, then you're going to lose muscle mass. But they might look at the research where a person, the research they're quoting, the people were doing like 50 miles of cardio and
people who fasted for 90 days straight, or like morbidly obese people and stuff like that.
Right, and ran at the same time, but they weren't using their arms. So in that whole grand scheme of things, that could be attributed to, you know, atrophy from just disuse. That process.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the point is use yourself. The only reference point should be yourself, not anybody else.
Right. Yeah, I mean it's time to get over all these crazy fears of stuff. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say we're gonna argue this until the cows come home, but you know, but we're seeing this in the newer research now. Like waist size is trumping, you know, BMR as a better indicator of overall health. So that basically means that body fat levels, you know. The first and foremost thing for people was to get their body fat in check.
Yep. And then after that, I think, and what we've discussed, I think that once you add in our actual measurement, the AI measurement, that's the number one way of correlating health because it also suggests that you've been doing some vigorous exercise, weight training, building muscle mass, and all the different benefits you get from that. So I personally think that the new way of measuring vigorous health is the actual AI index.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be, you know, somebody may come up with a different quote-unquote measurement. I mean, maybe they'll do leg size or something. Maybe they'll do leg to waist or whatever. But, you know, somebody might propose that. But I'm thinking overall, I mean, it will be some type of hybrid measurement like that that will come out.
Yeah.
That will be based on some type of, you know, muscle size, obviously, because, you know, bone density. And like you were saying, I mean, when you get old and you break a bone, that can kill you.
But what, it's like 80% fatal if for hip fractures, even like breaking an arm. So we all have a limited time. You might as well be as vigorous and robust throughout that time as possible. And so what I think and what we think is that just an ideal AI index for as long as you can keep it for the length of your life, that's the best you can do.
Yeah. Let's talk about something really quickly. Let's touch on this because, you know, I've been kind of talking about it on the blog a little bit, and you've been talking about it on your own personal blog. And we've talked about it, you know, between ourselves, but we really haven't talked about it with everyone listening. The fact of a lot of the things that are out there being based on the sheer overconsumption of food versus basically being in maintenance and how – and, you know, what your viewpoint is on, you know, let's say diets high in saturated fat, diets high in this, diets high in this, that high in that, how if a person was just eating at maintenance, even eating those same levels, then those things wouldn't even be an issue.
Not really, because you're burning them all off. Plus, everyone makes the argument of, well, you can't just eat fat all day. But, of course, who the hell is going to eat a brick? All they're going to eat is butter all day. Like, no one's going to actually do that. So those are just... those are interesting thought experiments, but they don't actually happen, and no one ever does them. So, if you're eating at maintenance, by definition, that means you're burning it all off because you're not at any excess. You're eating what you need, and there's no storage there. And if you have any degree of activity, like if you're doing your minimum daily movement, like if you're not just sitting around doing absolutely nothing, you should be fine, like more than fine. So there's like a lot of those concepts of high sugar or high saturated, that's also in a population that's already eating in a caloric excess. So,
right.
Everyone eats a variety of food. Like anyone that's listening to this is probably not in a position where they're stuck eating one or two food items. Like if you go to a third world country where people are literally getting by on just a small bowl of rice and some, you know, dried milk powder to get a bit of protein in them. Like we're lucky enough to not be in that position where we actually can pick and choose whatever food we want. So none of us are ever going to be in a position where food scarcity and a lack of variety matters. So that's where I get to the point where the choices of food are irrelevant. Just, you're going to be choosing variety regardless. So just don't eat too much. I know people hate that answer. I don't know why they don't like it. Like, I get into daily discussions about it, but that's it. And I guess this gets into back to your idea of the fear of, you know, as soon as you do this stuff and actually apply it, all of the questions and fears kind of just disappear because you're like, oh, right, that's how it works. So and Jason was a perfect example. I'm sorry, Jason, if we're picking on you a bit here. But, you know, you can speculate and talk about it and think about it, and then when you've done it, there's nothing to speculate or talk about because you've done it.
Oh, sure. I mean, he's like one of the number one cheerleaders in the customer forums now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But until he did it, he was skeptical about everything, and now that he's done it, he's like, oh, right, okay, that's, you know, he lost all that weight, didn't even do cardio. He just used his diet, and didn't do anything special with the diet. Just, you know, just ate less.
So all of us, everybody's doing something completely different.
Yeah, and it's no one else's business. If they ask, tell them. But, like, however you go about, you know, at least for a weight loss standpoint, you know, whatever, however you manage to find a way to do a caloric deficit, just that's it. Your ways, the way that you can stick to is the best way for you, and that's it. But it doesn't mean anyone else can do it.
Right. I mean, it's really easy for us to come up. I mean, we could come up with 10 different diets right now on the fly that would work for you. I mean, and we could sell every one of them.
We could come up with 100.
Well, I'm just saying, right on the fly. I mean, just not even thinking about it. I mean,
oh, right, yeah, that's what you're saying.
But you know, I mean, people keep coming up with different ways to do things. But in reality, is that, and the secret that nobody tells you, and this is weight loss, and in muscle building, it's kind of different. As long as you get the basic, you know, big idea under control, how you shake it up doesn't matter.
Yeah, and in this case, the big idea is just eat less.
Right. How you present that idea, you know, doesn't matter. Now, the day, and here's something to think about. The way you know there's no special diet and there's no special foods to eat or whatever, because the day somebody discovers that, they will win a Nobel Prize.
Oh, they'll take over the world, yeah.
And everyone will know, and it will happen. The day somebody figures out how you can eat in caloric excess and lose weight, they will win a Nobel Prize.
Well, you can't, because you'd also be talking about undoing the laws of physics.
Well, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, but there are people saying that you can do that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't happen.
Right. So what I'm saying is anything world-breaking like that that would ever come across?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Anything that's that big a deal would never be a secret. It would be publicized all over the place. I mean, there'd be a public address announcement right in the middle of, like, the evening news. Like, everyone would know about it.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have one guy you're getting an email from about his way of doing things and then him saying, oh, yeah, here's this way this guy's doing is good, too. I mean, you wouldn't have that. I mean, that guy would be like us and not tell anybody else about anybody else's stuff because it's stupid.
Yeah, totally.
Because our way's the best.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I mean, if my way is the best, and I keep telling you my way is the best and it's the only way to do it, why in the hell would I tell you about another way to do it?
Right. Actually, I'm just curious to see how everyone manages to go about doing it. Like, we all have a different story.
Yeah.
Like we know what the goal is. The goal is less calories. But now how does everyone do it? Everyone probably got a slightly different way of getting there.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's the worst thing that these marketers do, is they tell you that you can't come up with your own way.
Sure.
Which is even more disheartening, because if you don't have your own way, it's so hard to do it somebody else's way.
Well, that's kind of the reason why we talk about this, you know, back and forth on the phone and stuff. We don't talk about the mechanism of losing weight or growing muscle. We don't talk about the mechanism. We talk about, and just so you guys know, what we talk about almost every day is how do we put things together and package it up in such a way that you will be able to do it and stick with it consistently to get results.
Totally. It's like we need to come up with a list of things you don't need to know to get results. Like,
right.
You don't need to know anything about insulin. You don't need to know anything about blood sugar. You don't need to know anything about how the body metabolizes anything. You actually don't even need to know what's in food. You just eat food you like. There's so many. You don't need to know anything about glycemic index, macronutrients like protein, carbohydrate. You don't need to know any of that. You can lose weight without knowing any of that stuff.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to know.
Actually, I think you would be more successful if you never came across any of that information.
If the only thing that came up on the food label was just how many calories is in.
Yeah. The only thing a food label should ever have is calories. The more stuff that's on it, the worse it gets.
Right.
And the more you read about it, and the more you, because then you become paralyzed with fear and paralysis by analysis, and you get into a point where you don't even know what step to take, because you feel like every single step could be the wrong one. And then there's the fear of, the anxiety of taking action on the first idea you had, but then you read about another one, you're like, oh, is this bad? Like, should I have been doing the other one? So then you don't even try any of them, because you're kind of never sure if you're more afraid of the one you're leaving behind than the one you're trying.
Right, but the worst thing about it all, this is the thing that really, really hurts, is the fact that, you know, if you try to go make some money somewhere and try to do something making money, or you go try to, you know, do something to get better with the ladies or whatever, you know, none of that advice is going to tell you that if you don't do it this way, you're going to die.
Yeah, it's one way, but it's not the only way.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, there are 50 million different ways to make money. There are 50 million different ways to, you know, get women to like you more. Well, I wouldn't say 50 million, but, you know, there's different strategies and stuff. Yeah. But when it comes to weight loss,
there's just as many, but all it is a caloric deficit.
Right, but people will tell you, they're like, all right, well, if you don't do it this way, you might die.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well,
you know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah,
that's bad the fear-mongering gets. That's actually how bad it gets.
Right. If you don't do it this way, your metabolism's going to creep up and like start crawling, and then you're going to croak. You know, or if
yeah,
you
that
do
whole,
this,
that whole metabolism slowing down thing is the dumbest, could be the dumbest of them all. Because people, like, clearly people can starve to death, and those people don't have any fat on them. So, what happened to them?
Right.
Same with anorexics. Those poor people, there's no fat left on their body, and their body definitely metabolized all the fat first, and then that's when they started losing lean muscle. So, I mean, just think twice when anyone ever says anything about your metabolism slowing down. Think of how absurd that is. And think of how insulting that is to people who've actually starved to death or people who are anorexic. Tell them that their metabolism is slowing down, they can't lose fat. Like, that's...
Yeah, because it's...
Think of how embarrassing that would be if you were saying that to somebody who was actually in that state.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that their metabolism didn't catch up with them because they were continually in a deficit the whole time. So it's not like their body dropped all the way down to... So let's say they were only eating 600 calories a day. It's not like their body dropped down to only burning 600 calories a day, or they would have stayed the same.
No, their body was burning still. Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I just don't get how people don't see that. That's so plain as day.
Right.
Like, I mean, if you really need to prove it to yourself, go volunteer at an addiction clinic where those people... Or, you know, disorder clinic where those people are, and just, you know... Then you'll see. You'll see what happens when you don't eat, like, a lot of food. All of it goes. All your body fat, everything goes.
Yeah. So, anyway, like I say, not trying to get into a crazy mental state or anything like that. But, you know, just, I don't know, man. It just kind of pisses us off because, you know, I guess the one thing is testimonials are one thing, but it's pretty easy to find somebody to do your stuff that has nothing else to do in life but to do your stuff, and they get a result.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't tell you anything at all. I mean, at least with us, we give you interviews with the guys, and they tell you how they walked through and how their life ended up and what changed their life, what didn't change their life, what they had to do, what they didn't have to do. I mean, at least it gives you perspective. But, I mean...
Yeah, everybody's different. All these, you know...
Sure.
Everyone's living a different kind of life, but it's still applicable. What we're trying to do is give you, like, as we want your diet and fitness sort of piece of your life to be as minimally invasive as possible. Like, it's the Einstein quote, make it as simple as possible, but no simpler. But no, like, don't even do one extra minute in the gym if you don't have to. Don't read one more thing about nutrition if you don't have to. Because your life's not about your workout and your nutrition, it's about everything else. This is just something you do to take care of your body.
Yeah, and to augment and help those other things.
Well, yeah, I mean, it augments and helps your whole life. Obviously, your body's you. You are your body, so you want it in as best condition as possible. But you don't need to read a lot about it. You just need to get it done and then get it over with and go do whatever it is that you do.
Yeah, what point's a good-looking body if nobody sees it?
Right, exactly. You got to get out there and, just, you know, do whatever it is that you like to do.
Yep. Well, I think we got that covered up. I hope you guys enjoyed that particular interview. You got anything you want to touch on?
No, I think that's good. I mean, this is the third of our interviews, and then next week will be our overall winner. We'll talk. We'll give you guys Ron's interview.
Yeah, man. And like we say, man, we're gonna continually give you all the information you need to construct your own programs and do this and that. We're not going anywhere. But a lot of people, they feel like it's easier and less stress free just to take the ones we've got, the done for you systems over at AdonisIndexSystems.com. So, I mean, it's your choice. Either way, we're gonna help you out. So. If you'd rather have done for you, just go pick them up. If you want to try to put it together yourself and you've got a way to do it, then by all means do that as well. We're not going to stop you or tell you that you're stupid. So,
either way, we like the feedback, though.
Yeah, exactly. So for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and this is your Adonis Index Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.